When I was young, I got to the point I didn't know I was at where I found out I needed glasses. Yes, I wear glasses. I wear contacts now. But I was a young person, and my eyes were fine when I was a wee lad. At some point, when I became a teenager, when I became a teenager, at some point, it got worse, and I didn't know it got worse, because I'm nearsighted, which means I can see up close just fine, but I don't see super well very far. You're the same way? Okay. But it had gotten gradual, so I couldn't really tell. You know what I'm saying? So I thought what I saw was normal. I thought I was perfectly average. Well, turns out, I wasn't. I was in the woods one day with my dad and his friend. We were scouting out some areas on the property. They wanted to find deer. I won't tell some of you what they wanted to do to the deer because it would bother certain people, but they were yummy. But anyhow, so we were out there in the woods, and I was in my section, and they said, watch this area, scout over here. And they were in their own spots, and later they came by. They said, Arlen, I can't believe that big buck came so close to you. Did you see it? I'm like, what buck? Like, what do you mean, what buck? That big 10-point rack, you didn't see it? I'm like, I didn't see anything. So I went to the eye doctor that next week, and they gave me glasses. I never forget when the glasses were picked up, and we were driving home. I'm in the passenger seat, and I was like, oh, you're supposed to see all that far away, that clearly. I kept doing this. You ever do this before? I was like doing this thing where I'm taking them off, like, yep, that's what I'm used to. And whoa, that's the new world, you know? It was just so cool to have all that more depth and dimension. Anyhow, finished high school, went to college, got married. And then one day I said, I'm going to go in and get some contact lenses because I'm not afraid to put my finger in my eye. And I sure like the way I see things over the contacts more than the glasses personally. So I'm going to get them and maybe update my prescription. Well, what I did not know is my eyes had also gotten worse since my first bout. But again, it was gradual. I was used to it. What I was seeing was what I thought everyone was seeing. It kind of creeps in on you. As far as I was concerned, I had normal vision. But I found out I did not. And so when they gave me my contacts that day, they had contact lenses in. I went to the Walmart Vision Center because we are bougie like that, okay? And so I'm over there, and I remember popping those things into my eyes, and I'm standing in the Walmart Vision Center staring out at the store. And oh my goodness. I mean, I've been in the store. I knew they had all those sections. But for the first time, I'm seeing the depths and layers, the big rollback price signs they always have. It was like eye candy. It was like Disney World for my eyeballs. And I couldn't believe it. And it was the time as a young man that I first remembered that just because I could see, I wasn't blind, there's a difference between being able to see at all and being able to see clearly. There's a difference, right? You're like, Arlen, what does that have to do with today's sermon? Nothing. I just wanted to share a story with you. No. We're gonna come back to that. We're gonna come back to that, okay? But first, let's get back to where we're doing each week. We are taking a journey through the life of Jesus. And today, in our journey, we are in the book of Mark. We'll be there in a few minutes. We're gonna see a few events recorded by Mark in our continued journey of Jesus' footsteps on this earth. Now, I want to do two things by way of review before we get into the text. Okay, so allow me to review two things. First of all, remember that we've seen several times now that Jesus will oftentimes do a physical thing to illustrate a spiritual truth. Physical thing to illustrate something in the spiritual realm. I'll give you a few examples we've seen recently. He once asked a woman by a well for a drink of water because he was thirsty. Then he told her he would give her living water so she would never thirst again. He didn't have a container of water. He was referring to spiritual nutrition that would make her never be thirsty again in a spiritual sense. He once fed the multitudes and then told them afterwards, I am the bread of life. He who feasts on me will never be hungry again. Not that they would take a bite out of his arm, but he was referring from a physical miracle to a spiritual truth that if you take what I'm offering you, it will meet needs that are even far more important than your physical needs. We saw him open blind eyes that could not see. and then tell people that he came to open the eyes of the blind, not just physically, but also spiritually, and to also show people who think they can see that actually they're blind. So he's using physical things to illustrate spiritual truths. One more, Nicodemus. He says to Nicodemus, you must be born again. What does that mean? Well, the first time you're born physically from your mother, but the second birth is a spiritual birth. It's a different thing, but it's an analogy that shows you what God is doing in the world on two different levels. Are you with me? This is what's going on. Now, I'm saying all of this because today in today's story, Jesus is going to tap into physical things he's going to do, but he's going to make spiritual innuendos and applications that we need to catch that vibe or we're going to miss some of his points because he does that a lot. So I'm going to remind you of that. Second thing by way of review. We saw a number of weeks ago, if you were with us, we saw a miracle that Jesus did where he fed like 5,000 men and their families miraculously with just a few loaves of bread and a few fish. What we saw was afterwards the crowd tried to make him become their king. They came to him and they said to him, we want you to be the new king. Because they were looking for a Messiah that was promised in their scriptures that would come and set them free. In their minds, the Messiah was there to set them free from foreign oppression and foreign rule like the Romans and you know, make their nation great once more. All these things they had in mind. And so Jesus shows up and he is doing this bread, feeding the multitudes trick. And they're like, this must be the guy. We thought it was the Maccabees and then they kind of died. But this guy must be the guy. He can make bread like the old days with Moses, like manna from heaven type stuff. He's our guy. Let's make him king. But Jesus knew that what they wanted to do with him and what they believed about him was not what he came to do. He knew that. They misunderstood his purpose. He wasn't there just for Israel, for their people, to make them special. He was there ultimately to bring a message for the entire world. But they would have put him in a box. And so he decides, I got to get out of here. He puts his disciples, I'm reviewing, puts his disciples on a boat and says, guys, cross the lake. I'll catch up to you on the other side. Big Sea of Galilee there. They cross by boat. He stays behind, sends the entire crowd home. And then once everyone leaves, they think he's going to be around the next day because he's still there. He prays half the night. And then about halfway through the middle of the night, he walks on the water out into the Sea of Galilee to where the disciples are stuck because they can't get into a storm. And they're freaking out because they see him coming, think he's a ghost. If you remember the story, it's where Peter gets out of the boat, walks on the water for a little bit. They get off the boat the next morning in a different location. I'm just reviewing. When they got there, crowds soon followed them. And Jesus seems to be spent. He seems to be emotionally tired. And that's not unusual. He was fully God, but he was also fully man. He was hungry. He was thirsty. He was tired. You see him frustrated. And after doing that big miracle, remember that first miracle where he fed the 5,000? He was trying to get away for a retreat because they just lost John the Baptizer, who was killed. They're trying to get away. And now he had to feed these crowds. And so now he's just spent. He's tired. And he gets the next day, the crowds find him again after that miracle. And they're like, hey, we want more miracles. Give us another sign, particularly the sign of another meal. And Jesus just decides to take a whole different approach. He's like, you guys don't want me. You don't know what I'm even here for. You don't really care. And they're like, what do you mean? And he just tells them. He just spills everything. And everyone leaves. And Jesus demonstrated that he knew how to get a crowd and he knew how to lose the crowd. He did both in short order. There's always techniques to get a crowd. There's always ways to lose a crowd. And he did both in one day, within 2 days. Everyone left, and he looks at his disciples, and he's exasperated, and he says to them, what about you guys? You guys going to leave me too? And they're like, nah, we're good. We know who you are. We're staying. Okay. Now, that's a review, because today's story is going to seem very similar to that. Similar miracle, similar things that happen afterwards. It's almost a pattern. Jesus' response after this miracle is almost the same. You ever notice in your life there are certain patterns that you encounter where you do something and you'll notice that whenever I do that, this is the outcome. Whenever I do this, I feel this way afterwards. Jesus is going to have a pattern here where he's going to do a similar miracle. He's going to have similar emotions afterwards. Are you ready? Let's jump on in. It's found in Mark chapter 8 in verse number 1. We've got a lot of reading to do, so let's jump right in. The verses, if you want to open your Bibles, or they're on the screen as well. Verse 1, about this time, another large crowd had gathered, and the people ran out of food again. Jesus called his disciples and told them, I feel sorry for these people. They have been here with me now for 3 days, and they have nothing left to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will faint along the way, for some of them have come a long distance. Now, this sounds familiar. This time, the crowd that was gathered was more prepared. They had a few days of food, apparently, but at some point, they ran out. They just kept staying with Jesus longer for the miracles, for the teaching. And Jesus is like, they need to go home. They're going to get hungry. We got to feed them. Now, my guess would be the disciples are like, ooh, we know what to do now because we've seen this before, right? We know how Jesus operates in these moments. But look what the disciples actually say in verse 4. His disciples replied, how are we supposed to find enough food to feed them out here in the wilderness? They're like, there's no stores around. Now, if that sounds familiar to anybody, that's exactly what they said the last time. But the last time, it was legit, because Jesus had never made a miracle where he fed a bunch of people out of almost nothing. So to ask the last time how he's supposed to do that, I give him a pass, because it had never been done before. But they just seen him do it. The response I would have thought the disciples would have is something like this. Ooh, I know this story. I've seen him feed the crowds. Here comes the next one. Guys, check it out. But that's not what they said. They're like, what are we gonna do? No food. And before we bash the disciples, because they're easy to pick on 2,000 years later, that's all of us. That's me and you. Isn't that like us? Like we'll see God do something, right? Let's be real. We'll see him do something in our lives. We'll see him work. And then later on in life, we'll run into a problem. We'll be like, oh no, what am I gonna do? Can God take care of it? Is it going to be okay? And if we could just step back and see how he's been faithful before, we'd have faith. But it's almost like in the moments of fear, the fear can overtake us. And all we see is, what am I going to do? All of us maybe can take a step of faith that the disciples didn't take here, of saying, you know what? I think God's been good before. He's seen me through some other tough spots and I'm still here. I think I can trust him. But it's easy to forget. And so they're like, what are we going to do? We don't have enough food to feed these people. And so Jesus asked, how much bread do you have? 7 loaves, they replied. Well, that's more than they had last time. They had 5 loaves last time. So Jesus told all the people to sit down on the ground. Then he took the 7 loaves. He thanked God for them and broke them into pieces. He gave them to his disciples who distributed the bread to the crowd. It's the same story, just a different time. Verse 7 tells us a few small fish were found too. So Jesus also blessed these and told the disciples to distribute them. They ate as much as they wanted. Afterward, the disciples picked up 7 large baskets of leftover food. Now check this out. There were about 4,000 men in the crowd that day. Now it says 4,000 men. The last story said 5,000 men, but it later clarified that that did not include women and children. So I would assume the same thing is true here. 4,000 men plus their families. And Jesus sent them home after they ate. Now here's the thing. It's an amazing miracle. He's done it twice now. Now the last time was a little bit bigger. He fed 20% less people this time. And he started with 40% more food, so maybe it's a little less spectacular, but it's pretty spectacular, okay? He just did something that's impossible. And he has 7 baskets of leftovers. I don't think he's losing his touch. I think it's ridiculously awesome what he was able to do. Twice. And just like last time, he sent them home after they had eaten. Now, last time he sent the disciples ahead on a boat, but this time they did not go without him. They're like, we're not going. Last time you fed the multitudes and sent us on a boat without you, we ran into a storm. We're waiting for you, right? So Jesus has his disciples there. He dismisses the crowd. And this time he gets in the boat with them. And they sail across the lake, across the Sea of Galilee. Verse 10 says, immediately after this, he got into a boat with his disciples, and he crossed over to the region of Dalmanutha. Now, if a lot of things sound like the last time, very similar miracle, so is the things that happen next. Because last time he was frustrated the next day. He was tired, and then he ran into religious people, and he's like, oh. Well, get ready for it. Verse 11, ready? When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had arrived, they came and started to argue with him, because of course they did. This is what they did. They argued with him all the time. They're like, hey, I got a bone to pick with you. You know, because why? Because remember, these are religious people. We always give the Pharisees a hard time. These are people who they read the scriptures, they memorized the scriptures, they believed the scriptures, they taught the scriptures. They condemned other people with their scriptures. They were religious people. And Jesus didn't fit into their view of how God's supposed to work. Jesus didn't fit into their box. He didn't fit the system. And so he must be bad. He must be wrong. Let's find fault with how he does things. And so they're always arguing. And so Jesus gets off the boat after another exhausting miracle. By the way, the first time he fed 5,000 was the first miracle that was recorded in every gospel account, all four of them. It's a big deal. Even the second one, it says in the scriptures that no one understood the significance of the miracle. For some reason, this miracle was a biggie, and it was draining. And Jesus gets off the boat, just like last time. He runs into a crowd, and they're arguing with him. Now, last time he stayed there and he dealt with them until they all left. This time it says, testing him, they demanded that he show them a miraculous sign from heaven to prove his authority. Same as last time, but it's silly. Like, show them a sign. You want a sign? I just fed 4,000 men and their families with a few loaves of bread. That's a sign for you. A sign. I have healed people. But see, Jesus didn't do those things to prove himself, did he? Jesus didn't do those miracles to be a sign. He healed people to help people. He fed people to help people. That's why he did his miracles. But to the religious leaders, they're like, well, we want a sign. Jesus is like, I'm not going to do a magic trick for you to prove I am who I claim to be. A, that's exactly what the devil tempted him to be in the wilderness. Remember Jesus' first temptation as a man in the wilderness? The devil says, prove yourself. Do a trick. Jesus is like, no, you're going to tempt me. And now the people who are religious are like, well, show us a sign. He's like, that's not why I do what I do. I'm not going to do what you say because you told me, dance, monkey, dance, monkey, dance, monkey, dance. I'm not going to do it. That's not what I'm here for. You're not going to get your sign. I did a sign. Bunch of miracles, bunch of food left over. Here's a basket of it. Here's your sign. Jack Foxworthy, there's your sign. So I don't know. But anyhow, he says, look what his response. His response is epic. Verse 12, when he heard this, he sighed deeply in his spirit. Can you relate to that? And he said, why do these people keep demanding a miraculous sign? I tell you the truth, I will not give this generation any such sign. He is tired. He is over it. And the funniest thing to me is what he does next. This is read it. So he got back into the boat and left them and crossed to the other side of the lake. Last time he stayed there and kind of dealt with the whole frustrating crowd. He was spent. This time he's like, get off the boat. They're there to argue. He's like, I'm not doing this. Guys, back in the boat. And they left. They just got in the boat and left. He's like, I'm out. He's gone. That is so funny to me. There's just the times when Jesus is like, I've done all the people I can possibly do today. Is that an option for me? Sure. It depends if they're your kids. Okay, I'm out of here. So maybe so. Well, Jesus did it. So if you're like Jesus and you fed a multitude of people and people give you a hard time, just walk out. Just walk out. But anyhow, so Jesus is like, hey, guys, we're blowing this joint. And they sailed away. Here's the crazy part. Next verse. But the disciples had forgotten to bring any food. They only had one loaf of bread with them in the boat. Now, hold on now. Didn't they just feed like 4,000 people plus a bunch of, I don't know, they had 7 baskets of extra food. Where's that food at? Maybe what they did with that food is they couldn't fit it into the boat. They just gave it to other people. They had to have some food. How are they out of food? Well, here's what I think. It doesn't say it, but this is logical, so this is a little, we'll call it Arlenology, but I think it makes sense. It seems like when they got to Dalmanutha a minute ago, they knew they were running low of food, and they were supposed to go get some food while they were there. Judas Iscariot had the money bag. He was the treasurer. They're going to run over to the local Streck and Ventils, get some sourdough bread, a toaster to toast that baby, get some Nathan's all-beef hot dogs and some sharp cheddar cheese, I'm telling you. Mm. And they're going to get some food together, and they're going to have a nice meal. But when they got to Dalmanutha, before they could go figure it out, Jesus is like confronted by these religious leaders, who are like, give us a sign. And he's like, I can't even. On a scale of one to even, I can't. Guys, we're out of here. They got back in the boat and they left, and they're like, oh man, we got nothing. We got like one loaf of bread left. And Jesus seems a little hangry, okay? So what are we gonna do? Well, that's what's on their mind. But in verse 15, that's not what's on Jesus' mind. It says, as they were crossing the lake, Jesus warned them, watch out. Beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and of Herod. Now, what does that mean? Well, the Pharisees and Herod are religious factions. Not Herod. Herod, the person, was a ruler. But there was a group called the Herodians. And the Herodians and the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they were all different kinds of religious factions within the greater religion of Judaism. Judaism's a religion. They have factions that didn't agree with each other religiously about how to do the God thing. They didn't agree with each other politically about what God was doing in the world that day. Does that sound like denominations today in church world, in Christianity? Don't agree with each other about how God works, how we see things, who is right, who's wrong. So these are the factions, the Pharisees and the Herodians. But they all agreed on one thing together. Jesus is not one of them, and they're going to stand up against him. And Jesus is with his disciples, and he's spent. You saw him just do that number. And he says to his guys on the boat, guys, beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and of Herod. What does it mean, the yeast? Well, we saw yeast. Yeast is what you put in a bunch of dough when you're making bread. And the yeast, when you bake the dough, causes the bread to rise, become all fluffy and pillowy. That's the word we like for bread, pillowy, right? And so the yeast is important if you want that. And so is Jesus talking about yeast in bread? No. He's making one of his analogies, physical things, to teach a spiritual truth. Here's what Jesus was not saying, just in case you're confused. He was not saying, guys, someday if you're ever in the house of a Pharisee or a Herodian, and they make some bread while you're eating dinner with them, don't eat it. That's not what he was saying. He was saying, guys, watch out for their teaching. The other Gospels clarify he was referring to their teaching. He was saying, just like you put yeast into a lump of dough to make it rise, people will take your beliefs and your religion, your truth, and if you're not careful, they're going to stick their things in there that are not right. But it's going to sound so right, it's going to permeate your life, you're going to become just like them. Self-righteous and uncaring, religious people who misses the point. Watch out for their teaching. It's dangerous. Whew. That's what he was saying. But that's not what the disciples heard him say. Verse 16 tells us, at this, they began to argue with each other because they had not brought any bread. Like, see, he brought up yeast. He wants some bread. I told you he's getting hangry. Ooh, Judas, it's your fault. You got the money. Peter, you're the one in charge around here. They're arguing. Missing the whole point. And we saw how Jesus, again, why is it that after these, I don't understand why after these two miracles, Jesus always felt so wiped out. We saw it when he fed the 5,000. We see it after the 4,000. He's just like on margin. Again, I know he's God. I know, but he's fully God. He's fully man. Hungry, thirsty. He went through things like we go through. All points like we are. And so he's going through some stuff, and he says, he's tired. He looks at his guys, and he says, guys, verse 17, Jesus knew what they were saying, so he said, why are you arguing about not having no bread? Why are you arguing about that? Don't you know yet? Don't you understand even yet? Are your hearts too hard to take it in? Like, well, easy, Jesus. Easy, man. It was just a bread mistake, you know? I mean, our hearts are hard. Again, I think if you've ever poured yourself out in any kind of important work or in ministry work before, Usually there's certain things that just leave you tapped, man. And Jesus is tapped. He's like, guys, you got hard hearts. He's like pulling no punches. Look what he says next. He says, you have eyes, can't you see? You have ears, can't you hear? Well, obviously they could hear. They had ears. They heard the sounds he was making. But he's like, but do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? You know, he's like, you have eyes. Can't you see? I mean, I know you see, but can you not spiritually see what I'm doing here? He says, don't you remember anything at all? So he decides to remind them. He says in verse 19, when I fed the 5,000 with five loaves of bread. Remember that way back when the day when I did that? Yeah. He said, how many baskets of leftovers did you pick up afterward? 12, they said. Okay. And then he says, and when I fed the 4,000 with seven loaves, like yesterday, how many large baskets of leftovers did you pick up? 7, they said. Don't you understand yet? He asked them. He said, guys, you think I'm worried about bread? You think I'm like suddenly, I'm you think the thing I'm worried about in this boat is that there's not enough food. I like fed 5,000 with 12, a few loaves of bread. Fed 4,000 with a few loaves of bread. I think our one loaf is plenty for me to feed us all. I'm not worried about the bread shortage. Don't you guys see? Don't you guys understand? And one of the other gospels, not Mark's, explains to us that it was then they're like, oh, he's talking about the teaching of the religious leaders. Watch out for that. And that brings us to our final story in this today's run. But it all ties together. Mark 8:22, very next verse. When they arrived at Bethsaida, some people brought a blind man to Jesus, and they begged him to touch the man and to heal him. This is not unusual for Jesus. Wherever he went, he was a celebrity. Wherever he went, the crowds were there. Hey, help us. And because he helped people, right? So Jesus, this is funny to me, verse 23. Jesus took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. Now, I know there's a lot going on in that verse on the screen that you want to look at. It's kind of weird. But just look at that first part for a moment with me. I should have divided this into two slides. Look at the first part. Jesus is there in the village. And they're like, hey, here's a blind man. Can you heal him? And Jesus says, you know what? I'll heal him, but I ain't doing it with all you here. He takes the man and leads him out of the village. I don't know why. I mean, I think I know why. We'll see why in a minute. But a possible reason why is he was just up to his neck with people. So he's like, fine. He takes the guy out of the village. Never before have we seen Jesus do that, by the way. We've seen him heal people in isolation. We've seen him keep people out of a house to raise up a girl who died on her deathbed. But this is like, buddy, come with me. You all stay here. Come with me. And he brings him out of the village by himself. And then it says, then spitting on the man's eyes, he laid his hands on him and asked, can you see anything now? It's gross. Yeah, thanks, you know. Hopefully it wasn't just one of those frustration things. Oh, I'll fix your eyes, you know. I don't think so. Right? I'm just saying, it's just gross. Like, why does Jesus do that? You know, you ever wonder, seriously, though? Like, why does Jesus heal people differently at different times? We've seen Jesus walk into somebody's presence and just say, be healed. Just say words, and they're completely healed. Raised from the dead by saying something. We've seen Jesus from a distance heal someone who's not even there by telling their loved one they're healed, and that was enough. And then there's like three stories we've seen so far. Two blind stories and one deaf story we skipped earlier with a man who is deaf with a speech impediment, where Jesus kind of gets weirdly hands-on, or something on, I don't know. Gets hands-on. But I don't know why. I don't know why he does it differently in different places. I wasn't there. I'm not quite that old. But for some reason, he gets a little bit more involved in this miracle. And then he says to the man, okay, can you see anything now? And look at the man's response in verse 24. The man looked around. Yes, he said, I see people, but I can't see them very clearly. Now, I want to point this out to you. Based upon a couple things that are worded in this passage, it would seem to be that this man was not always blind. Like Jesus has healed people who were blind from birth before. This man seems to have had a history of seeing at some point. But he lost his vision. He was blind, and Jesus healed him. And he says, yes, it's better, thank you. Now I can see people, but he says, I can't see them very clearly. So in other words, my vision's not fully restored. And he says something very weird. He says, I see people, they look like trees walking around. Well, trees aren't supposed to walk around. They're supposed to be inanimate objects, you know. But he's like, I'm looking at people, they look like things that are not people, but they're people, but they're not. I don't know. I don't see very clearly. Now, isn't that strange? Can we just sit here for a moment and confront a weird truth? Not a truth, but a question. Well, here's the truth. Can we all agree that Jesus was very capable of doing a total miracle? Right? He didn't have to like, oh man, wasn't quite strong enough to get that guy all the way, you know, seeing all the way. I mean, we've watched him. He always does the whole thing. He's like, you're sick. Your fever was 105. Now it's only 102.5. It's not what he does, right? He doesn't do half miracles. He didn't raise the kid from the dead and say, you're half alive. You're a zombie now. I mean, he's always like healing people completely. Like, why in the world is he like this guy? For some reason, just like, can you see now? I see some, but I don't see clearly. Like, is he losing his power? Is he like, you know, having a Spider-Man crisis? He's got to like get his powers back or something? No. There's a reason he's doing it this way, so why? And it goes back to our illustration we've seen for the last several weeks. Jesus would take a physical thing he would do to teach a spiritual lesson. A physical miracle, a physical thing to teach a spiritual lesson. Jesus is letting this man illustrate what is also true about all of us in a spiritual sense. Sometimes we're not blind, maybe we were about something, but we come to see. But we don't see things as true for what they truly are. We only see through our skewed or our imperfect vision and perspective. We see things that are happening and we see them through the lens of our filters and our thoughts that help us to, and we think we're fine because we can see, but we don't see clearly. Kind of like me when I got my glasses for the first time. I didn't know how limited my vision was. Unlike this man knew. He's like, I know that I don't see clearly. I see, but I don't see clearly. When I was young, I could see, and I thought I could see clearly because I didn't know any better. That was my baseline was what it was. I had to find out that my vision was limited and it could be enhanced. And I'm like, oh, I guess I wasn't seeing clearly. And this man's like, I see people like trees walking around. I don't see them for who they are. I see them as something else. I don't see clearly. We're going to talk about that for just a moment, but we'll be done. But let's finish the story. Mark 8:25. Then Jesus placed his hand on the man's eyes again, and his eyes were open. His sight was completely restored, which implies back to being able to see like he once did. Completely restored, and he could see everything. What's the next word? Clearly. He can now see everything clearly. Step two. Step one, he opens his blind eyes so he can see. And step two, he opens his eyes so he can now see clearly. And then Jesus sent him away, verse 26, Jesus sent him away saying, don't go back into the village on your way home. I don't know why. He's like, I don't want to see those people either. Just go home. I'm going to catch the next boat out of here. I don't know. But Jesus sends him home his own way. Now that's our story for the day. We got a few stories knocked out. But when we come here every week, I don't want you just to know things. I do want you to know. The big part of this Bible series we're doing right now is so that we know the stories of the Bible. That we can read them for ourselves. We can sit down in church and slow down and kind of think through them a little deeper together. It's what I want you to know, but it's also what I want us to do. That's the application, right? So here's the question. What do we learn from the story today? I mean, a couple things I want to say, and then we'll be done. Number first thing is this. Just because you can see doesn't mean that you can see clearly. Can we agree to that? Not just physically, like my story when I was young, but spiritually. Just because you can see doesn't mean you can see clearly. Sometimes when we know we can't, sometimes we have a baseline. We think our vision is perfectly normal. Lots of folks think that they're gifted. I got great insight. Through all my years of ministry, I've heard people so many times come to me and say, oh, Arlen, you should know something about me. I'm a bit of a clairvoyant. I can just see things. I have insight into things that no one, I can read something. I just know I got this gift. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I never want to doubt it. Several times over time, I'm like, and they don't. That much is obvious. They don't. But they think they do. And I think that we're like me sometimes. We think, I know what's going on. I know all about whatever. I know all about the Bible. I know all about truth. I know all about doing right. I know all about marriage. I know all about parenting. I know all about life. I know all about my career. I know all about a certain subject. I know all about politics and how to fix our country. I know everything. And we're so sure of all that we can see. But just because we can see doesn't mean we can see clearly. Sometimes our eyes are opened, but we don't see it all. If you use a spiritual sense of salvation, being our eyes being opened, right? The amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. And I was blind. I see, but does it mean I see clearly? I might think I do because I see better than I used to, but I could be fooling myself. You know what it takes? It takes humility. This man in the story, he's like, I can't see clearly. He was smarter than me when I was a kid. I can't see clearly. I need help. I'm not seeing people clearly. You ever do that with people? You see people like trees walking around. You don't see a person, you see an issue. I've seen so many Christians mistreat people because they're fighting over issues and they don't see the people they're trampling underfoot while fighting over their issues because you won't see people clearly. You ever have someone hurt you and you're like, and you see, I see what they did. Do you see why? Do you see what's going on in their life? Someone disagrees with their life, their beliefs, their religion, their politics, whatever, and you're like, they're just this. I see clearly who they are. Do we? Do we understand people? Or do we just have opinions? It's easy to see people, but not see them clearly. It's easy to see our situations. It's easy to see our spouse and not see them clearly. It's easy to see our children, our parents, our neighbors, our friends, our coworkers, our business decisions, and say, I know what I see, but just because I see it doesn't mean I'm seeing it clearly. And the man in the story today said, I don't see clearly. That takes humility, by the way. Can I just challenge us all? Humility. Did you know that the greater indication of success, people think, well, it's a high IQ. Being intelligent, it will make you successful. IQ is important for certain things especially, but do you know what's a far greater indication of success more so than IQ? EQ, emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence has far more bearing on how successful someone will be in their life than intelligence. Now, does anybody else know what is the very first and most important ingredient in having emotional intelligence? The first most important step in emotional intelligence is what? I hear some. Good, it's good. The most important key of emotional intelligence is self-awareness. Self-awareness. A lot of people think we're self-aware, but are we? Our ability to be self-aware allows us to understand ourselves and other people and grow. And that's a far bigger indication on your success in your business, in your relationships, at home, anywhere. Emotional intelligence. Self-awareness. It's humility. It's saying, I don't maybe have all the answers I think I do. I don't have all the insight I think I have. I see, but do I see clearly? Now, here's what I'm trying to say here. It's such a big idea. The humility to understand that is always the step towards salvation on any level. You want to figure out your business thing better? Admit that you don't have all the answers. You want to become a better person in your relationship? Quit saying, I know what's wrong with them, and I know. Just admit, I could grow a little bit. Anything in life, you can't teach someone something if they know it all. But if they say, I don't know it all, then you can learn. You know what salvation is? Literal salvation through Jesus Christ is, how does salvation start? It begins with us understanding that we are all sinners. If someone says, I'm not a sinner, or I'm perfect enough, God doesn't need me, I'm good, I'm great, then there's no need for a Savior. because I got this. Salvation always begins with all have sinned. And I know that. And now I can say, there's a Savior. There's a solution. It's the process. Jesus said to the Pharisees one time, you guys think you can see, but you're blind. You're saying we're blind? Yeah, because if you could just admit you weren't, we could get somewhere. But you can't help someone who got it all figured out. Jesus another time said to people who were religious, he says, a doctor doesn't come for those who are healthy or think they're healthy. He comes for those who know they're sick. You can't help someone who has it all figured out or thinks they do. The humility of saying, maybe I don't see it all clearly, is the step that brings the growth. And this man said it, and Jesus said, well, let's take care of the next part too. Let's open your eyes and let's open them all the way. So, our pride is what blinds and deceives us. And so I want to give you a simple prayer to take home and we'll be done. A simple prayer. You're going to write this down. It's not that complicated. It's very short. And you should pray this prayer. You should add it to your prayer life. Maybe you can pray it every day. Maybe you should pray it every time you're facing a situation. Maybe it's a prayer to pray whether we think we need to or not. But this prayer, I think, can go a long ways in our faith journey. It goes like this. Lord, help me see. And help me see clearly. Lord, help me see. And help me see clearly. There's two beautiful parts to that. The first part is, Lord, help me see. That's where I know I'm blind. The first part is, Lord, I know I'm blind in this area. Maybe it's salvation. I know I need to be saved. I know I need to start a relationship with you. Help me see. Maybe it's, Lord, I know I'm blind in this relationship of my life. I know I'm not seeing people clearly in this part of my life. I know I'm not seeing a thing. I know I'm blind. Lord, help me see. But the second part is just as big. Is, Lord, help me see clearly. Lord, the times where I think that I am looking at things just fine because it's what I see, I think is normal, but I don't know what I'm missing. I don't know what's lacking. I don't know where my limitations are. Lord, where I think I can see, but I don't see clearly, help me see clearly. That's the prayer of humility. Lord, help me see, but Lord, elsewhere, help me see clearly. It's a game changer. It's relationship help. It'll help your marriage. This is not the, listen, just in case someone misses the point, I'm not suggesting to add this prayer to your marriage portfolio. Lord, help my spouse to see and help them to see clearly. It's not the takeaway today. Right? Help my kids to see, help my parents to see. Help me to see. If I know I'm blind, help me to see. I know I need to see. But Lord, maybe I think I have it all figured out. Maybe I'm sure of myself, and maybe I'm like old Arlen, and I need to have this Walmart Vision Center aha moment. What? There's more. I had no idea. Help me see clearly. That's a simple prayer. I think it's a game changer because it puts us in a position for God to do another miracle. Are you saved today? Are you a believer? If you're not, I hope you'll trust him today. But if you're a believer, you come to faith in Christ, don't let his miracles in your life stop there. If you've seen growth in your life, you've got to do things, that's great, but don't stop there. Say, Lord, thank you. Help me see where I can't, and help me see clearly where I think I can. And that is how we grow.